Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 99, recorded Monday, June 25th, 2012. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: downgrading elite flyers and finding time when off the road. Well, I've been off the road more than I've been on it since the last episode. Just another trip to Dallas, allowing me to take advantage again of the TSA's pre-check line, getting sort of envious, puzzled looks from the other American Airlines elite flyers, getting waved through the special gate, tossing my bags on the X-ray conveyor belt, sort of sauntering through the metal detector, and then on my way to the gate. A 45-second exercise while the other guys are taking off their jackets, shoes, belts, emptying their pockets of coins, gum wrappers, business cards. They're pulling out their laptops, iPad, Kindles, one-quart baggies of liquid toiletries. They're holding their arms up in the full-body scanner, waiting behind the tape until somebody radios the okay, then reassembling their bags and getting redressed, belts, shoes, jackets, making sure that nothing's left behind before heading to the gate. And this is in the status line. I'll tell you, I'm seriously thinking of limiting my travels to just those places with TSA pre-check lines. So following up, while my podcasting cadence has slowed, I have increased my blog writing. I've written a few more blog posts of late. In one, I disagreed with some surveys that called free Wi-Fi the most important hotel amenity. I made the case for free breakfasts. First, I mean, it's a great convenience. Unless you're staying downtown in a city like London or New York or San Francisco or Chicago, you know, getting breakfast outside of the hotel, you know, involves a car ride, which then usually translates into Starbucks. And I'm a big fan of the spinach feta cheese wrap, or you end up at McDonald's, where I'll fall back to one, just one, breakfast burrito, no matter how many times they try to sell me two, or Dunkin' Donuts, where they inevitably give me a hard time about walking in with a cup of Starbucks coffee. And, as Rich Frazier puts it, a great way to stretch your per diem dollars. Rich writes, you know, you can't beat it on value, the hotel breakfast, although you have to get quite creative when it comes to those reconstituted eggs. Sort of various combinations of cheese, ham, and hot sauce make them much more palatable. That, some yogurt, a cup of oatmeal, a piece of fruit, and I'm good until lunch without snacking. Just avoid the biscuits and gravy at all costs. Leo Vigoda, however, is just suspicious of the whole free thing. Leo says, I would prefer to have good internet access that I pay for, or a good breakfast that I pay for, that, rather than something free, which will inevitably be of lower quality. After all, on a business trip, sustenance and network access are reasonable business expenses. That being said, I think the best amenity I want at a hotel is a fantastic concierge. A superb concierge is much better than a quick search on Yelp and will make your stay in a city much more fulfilling. Well, thanks to both Rich and Leo for leaving those comments on the Travel Commons website. Good thoughts. I think Rich is right there with me. It's a cost thing. It's also a convenience thing. But Leo makes a good point. There's nothing like having a well-connected local to help you really enjoy a good city. Scott Drake pinged me on Twitter. He wrote, you know, just heard the first 2 minutes of episode 97, he wrote, which was about my first trip to Beijing in January. You could taste the pollution. Yes, people look at me like I'm crazy when I say that. Glad I'm not alone. Well, I'll tell you, Scott, you are not alone. The other three guys with me on that trip thought the same thing. You could taste it when you breathed it in and when you coughed it back out. Yeah, I don't know which I enjoyed more on our Saturday trip out to the Great Wall, the breathtaking views, or the fact that you could take a breath without coughing. In the last episode, I talked about restaurants pushing their own sort of BYOD, bring your own device agenda on customers, taking advantage of customers' smartphones to do things that restaurant-provided devices like pagers or credit card machines used to. I mean, not that it's a bad thing, it actually makes a lot of sense. I tried Level Up, one of the mobile payment apps that I mentioned last week at a food truck, Duck and Roll, in downtown Chicago. I'm actually not sure that the truck took cash. The owner had an iPhone with a Square credit card reader and also accepted Level Up. I started the app on my iPhone. I had already run through the setup routine, linking it to one of my credit cards. It displayed a QR code that the truck owner read with the camera on her iPhone. She pressed a couple of buttons and boom, we were done. While she got me my miso short rib banh mi sandwich, well, it is a food truck. The receipt showed up in my email, much easier than paying with a credit card or even cash. I seem to be clearing out a couple of odds and ends here, but as we get into the summer, we get into the thunderstorm season, and in the middle of the U.S., it's tornado season, which reminds me of an incident about this time last year in O'Hare. I was connecting through O'Hare on my way from a customer meeting in London to a conference in Austin, Texas. No direct flights there, so I was going to have to connect. And my theory is if I got to connect through a U.S. airport, I might as well do it through O'Hare. I mean, I live 25 minutes from the airport. If things go bad, I can always sleep in my own bed. It doesn't work for everyone, though. Check the show notes for a picture of someone setting themselves up in Camp O'Hare for the night. Sorry for them, but it does work for me. So anyhow, I arrive from Heathrow early, I breeze through immigration, no problems getting through TSA and Terminal 3, board my American flight to Austin. Then the pilot gets on, cues the mic, which, as we've talked about in past episodes, is always a bad thing. He says a front is moving in, and he's going to try to get us out before it hits. Yeah, I tell you, I've never seen anyone sprint out of O'Hare before. Midway Airport, yeah, maybe. O'Hare, it's just too big and it's too crowded. And it didn't happen this day. The front came in, and I will tell you, started rocking that MD-80 like nothing I have ever experienced. We evacuated the plane. People in the back of the plane actually began to panic. "Get moving," they yelled, or it was kind of a cleaned-up version of what they yelled. Sprinting out of the shaking jet bridge back into Terminal 3, we were told, "You guys, you should probably stay away from the windows," which is a tough order in that concourse because it's got windows on both sides. So people congregated around the McDonald's and a couple of bars, which only had windows on the other side, and waited for the front to blow through. Now, over in Terminal 1, the United Terminal, they actually moved everyone down into the tunnel that runs between the two concourses. It's much safer, and for those who have connected on United through O'Hare, it's much more entertaining with sort of the ceiling neon lights chasing themselves, back and forth down the tunnel. Though I would guess that the soothing new age music that goes with the neon lights probably would get on your nerves after a while. Now, of course, after all this entertainment, I still needed to get to Austin. Now, after the front blew through, they reopened the runways and started to untangle the delays, flights getting in so they could unload and leave again. And after 2 hours, though, of hemming and hawing, American admitted that our MD-80 was damaged by the jet bridge banging on sort of the rocking and rolling airplane during the worst of the winds. Actually, I was not surprised. And of course, there were no other flights to take us to Austin because American had waited so long to cancel. And there were no spare planes because it was just a screwed-up night. So, at least for me, no problem. I just caught a cab back home and slept in my own bed. I was surprised, though, the next day to find that the first available flight was at 3 in the afternoon. Now, given that I was due to fly back that then following morning, that would have given me maybe 12 hours in Austin, 6 of which I would have been asleep. I was, gotten too late to make my meeting. I just decided to skip it. But of course, here's the kicker. American charged me a $150 change fee to cancel that ticket and use it later. I mean, really? I mean, they canceled the flight. "No weather," they said. No, it was a damaged airplane because your gate agent didn't pull back the jet bridge. Weather, they said. I didn't fly American for another 6 months. Hey, if you've got a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use the Voice Memo app on your iPhone or something like Virtual Recorder on your Android phone to record and send in an audio comment. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, or you can always post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or always go old school, like Leo and Rich, and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is downgrading elite flyers. So last month, United CFO said this about their Mileage Plus program. We had certain groups in this program that were over-entitled, if you will, and now we've realigned the benefits of that program with what the customers and program participants are actually providing to the program. It's a good change going forward. Well, there you go. Let's parse that statement. The first sentence, certain groups, which I assume mean elite Mileage Plus members, were over-entitled. I mean, even if that's true, you'd think the CFO would be smart enough to follow one of the golden rules of sales. If it feels good, don't say it. Coming off the industry worst performance in both on-time arrivals and baggage complaints, I mean, who would think it's a good idea to insult a loyal subset of customers? I mean, those who bore the brunt of United's lousy performance in Q1 of this year. The second sentence, we've realigned the benefits with what those customers are providing. In other words, we were giving those customers too much value for the revenue they were providing us. So we've taken away some of what we were giving them to balance things out. In other words, downgrading elite flyers. Now, United is just the most recent and probably the most egregious example of late. I mean, using the Continental merger as cover, United took away probably the most valuable perk from the lowest status level. They took away the free advanced booking of Economy Plus seats with extended legroom. They took that away from what is now the silver level, and then they added a new status level, platinum, at the 75,000-mile level, basically, effectively devaluing their mid-tier status, what was platinum exec at 50,000-mile, now gold. I mean, there were some other tweaks about, tightening up the ability to use upgrades and things like that. None of them were positive. But, I mean, that's to be expected from an industry that continues to sort of nickel and dime its customer and, just to claw back every last bit of revenue it can. And, again, United's just the most recent example. I mean, Delta also reduced the number of free bags it's providing its lowest level flyers, going from 2 to 1. One more sign that that 25,000-mile status flyer really doesn't mean that much to the airlines. I mean, they don't get much more recognition than the guys paying $95 a year for the airline credit card, which I guess it makes sense if you look at the numbers. I mean, when American Airlines started the Advantage program in 1981, it was a loyalty rewards program meant to give frequent flyers a reason to stick with American as deregulation really kicked in and was starting to commoditize the business. I mean, there were increasing flight choices out of every airport, and those newer competitors were driving down lower fares. American came up with Advantage just to provide some sort of non-price-based differentiation. Well, now, these frequent traveler programs, frequent flyer programs, it's actually a major revenue source, a line of business that, you know, is estimated to have added $7 billion to the top line of North American carriers last year. Now, for a frequent traveler, these downgrades actually will drive a change in the strategy of, you know, how you distribute your flights and how you distribute your miles. It used to be that you would always want to concentrate as much of your travel as you could on a single airline in order to hit some level of status, because even the bottom tier, that 25,000-mile level, American's Advantage Gold, United's Premier, Delta's Silver Medallion, it had some value. But today, since you can pretty much buy the bottom tier privileges for a $95 credit card fee, and even there, you can usually get the first year of that fee waived, you know, it only makes sense to concentrate your miles if you think you're going to hit that next tier, that 50,000 mile tier, American's Advantage Platinum or Delta's Gold Medallion. The reduced rewards for the bottom tier status just aren't worth the hassles, a twist in your schedule, or paying, say, you know, $50 extra to get on your favorite carrier. It's just not worth it to try and fly that single airline. And, you know, the airlines are probably okay with this. I mean, the act of flying passengers is probably the least profitable part of an airline nowadays, while, you know, selling frequent flyer miles to credit card companies is probably one of the most profitable lines of business. Airlines are shifting from rewarding their most loyal customers to their most profitable. And, you know, they're not the first industry to do it, and they're not going to be the last one either. United's top status tier, Global Services, has always been for their highest spending customers, not the ones with the highest mileage. I mean, in some ways, you know, this makes life a bit easier. Instead of working to earn special treatment, now you can just buy it. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is finding time when you're off the road. So I've been off the road now for 3 weeks, not out of the ordinary for most people, but for me, this is the longest stretch I've been home in over a year. And as always, there's a bit of an adjustment. And that's not to imply that adjustment is negative. I mean, I've increased the mileage I've put on my bike by an order of magnitude. Rather than getting one, maybe two rides a week if I really push it, getting up early on a Sunday, I'm now getting, yeah, I don't know, 3 to 4 rides a week and more mileage because I don't feel pressure to get off the road so I can do other things. Indeed, that's probably the biggest change, the release from the pressure to pack a week's worth of errands, to-dos, family time into a 2 to 3 day window. Which kind of dovetails into another adjustment, finding alone time. When you travel, there's plenty of alone time, even when you're surrounded by people, TSA queues and boarding lines and the center seat of a full plane. It's sort of like being alone in the crowd. You know, and then being alone by yourself, eating dinner solo at a bar, channel surfing in your hotel room at night. Now, these are certainly not the highlights of travel, but I mean, they do have something. They offer you time alone to think, to listen to music and podcasts, to read, or just to stare off into space. Coming off the road, you're still geared to maximize family or friend or significant other time. You're just still used to trying to compress and take advantage of every moment at home, even if it means sitting with someone and watching a lousy TV show or playing Scrabble. I mean, it takes some adjustment to figure out how and where you'll grab or recreate that alone time. You know, sort of figuring out which lousy TV show you don't have to watch and when you get to go off and read or listen to music on your own. Now, Sunday nights are actually a good time for me. When I'm traveling, Sunday night after dinner is pretty much lost. I mean, I lose that last bit of the weekend to get ready for my Monday morning flight out of O'Hare. I'm ordering a cab, I'm checking into the flight, I'm packing, sort of checking, topping off the charges on the whole sort of myriad of electronic devices I seem to now require for every bit of travel. And since my family is used to me disappearing into my home office after Sunday dinner, I've just sort of kept up that routine. But, I'm writing or reading instead of packing. I mean, it's that little bit of alone time. Of course, the real adjustment now, being off the road, is having to pay for my morning Starbucks stop. I mean, it's then that you really appreciate the power of the expense report. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 99. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is again from the CC Mixter website. Check the show notes for the song titles. Quite honestly, I haven't completely figured out which ones I'm going to use. I'll figure that out when I'm mixing the show. So all the links to each of the songs will be in the show notes, so go ahead and take a look there. And as always, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website, post comments on the Facebook wall. And so until we talk again next time, take care, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. One thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying.